call your attention to the Old Testament again this evening. I want you to go with me to the book of Judges. The book of Judges. I'm going to preach tonight about a man of mystery. A man of mystery. His name is Shamgar. Most of us probably have read about him. You haven't read much about him because the Bible doesn't say much about him. But it does give us a little hint here and there. There are two portions of scripture that he has mentioned. The first one is found in chapter 3 and verse 31. Judges 3 and verse 31. And after him, the him there is a reference to the man that preceded him. His name was Ehud. And after Ehud was Shamgar, the son of Anath, which slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad. And he also delivered Israel. Go with me to chapter 5. Chapter 5, verse 6. And it says that in the days of Shamgar, the son of Anath, in the days of Jael, or Yael, the highways were unoccupied. The travelers walked through byways. Those are the verses in Judges that tell us about Shamgar. Now, I think that he is a unique man for a lot of reasons. One of the reasons is because of the brevity of what we know about him. There are some of these judges, and we know quite a bit about them. I'll probably refer to some of them here in a few minutes. But the name Shamgar is not a Hebrew name. It is a name that either comes from the Hittites or the Horites. It is, and I think that I'm correct with this, it's Hurrian in its origin, and it has to do with the Hittite-type people. All of those people that were people like the Ites, the Hittites and the Perizzites and all of those, they all were from the land of Canaan, right? They became known as Canaanites, and there were a lot of different flavors of a Canaanite. And so the name Shamgar, it means a stranger. Now, it not being a Hebrew name, it being a heathen name, in my mind, it shows maybe the influence of the Canaanites on his family. When you name a kid, it's usually in honor of someone. Nobody names their kid Judas. People don't even name their dog Judas. Only lunatics name their dogs Adolf. We name our children things that we want them to live up to. Sarah was named because we like the name Sarah in the Bible. We got more heathen after that, but she was the first, and so we named her after Sarah in the Bible. And many of you, maybe you had a name of someone that was highly respected in your family. My daughter Allison, her middle name is Faye. Speaking of Fays, Miss Faye Miller is doing well. She sent me a text this afternoon after the morning service, and she just wanted to thank me for explaining plumb lines, podiums, the temples. She said, that was great. So she was watching it. But Allison was named Faye as her middle name because that was my wife's favorite aunt. Aunt Faye, she lived over in Birmingham. And so Shamgar, though, is named not after something godly. He's named after a Canaanite people. If you keep reading in those two verses and keep analyzing, it'll say twice that he is the son of Anath. Anath is not Jewish. It's not Israelite. It's not Hebrew even. Anath is a heathen name. Anath was not even a man. It was a woman that was a deity in Canaan. She was known as a warrior goddess. She was thought to give her followers extra strength and military decision-making, a great prowess in their battles. And so that's another reason why I'm thinking, well, maybe his family was influenced secularly, because it says he was a son of Anath. In other words, it was like they were a follower of a heathen deity. And so I read that and I'm thinking, man, that guy didn't start off too good. Well, when you keep reading and you see the times in which they live, which we see here in chapter 5, it says that it was in the days of Hiel, whatever how you want to pronounce it. The J's in Semitic language are sometimes pronounced like an H for us. And every time I say that, I think about the old joke about the South Georgia preacher that went out to Texas, and him and his wife were going to go see their daughter that lived out beyond Texas and all the way into California. So they got through Texas and Colorado, and they got into California, and they were tired, and so they stopped, and he was going to fill up, and so he was talking with the attendant, and the attendant said, well, where are you from? Oh, I'm from South Georgia. He said, well, what are you doing out in California? Well, we're coming out here to see our daughter. He said, well, where does she live? He said, she lives in San Jose. And he said, San Jose? He said, yep. He said, that's where she lives. She lives in San Jose. He said, well, you know, out here, you know, it's not pronounced J, it's pronounced H. So it's not really San Jose, it's San Jose. Oh, I appreciate you telling me that. He said, I want to be able to make sure I'm not looked down upon here. So the old attendant looked at him. He said, well, how long are you guys going to be here? He said, I think we're going to probably be here from sometime, maybe through Hoon or Hula. And so sometimes the J's are pronounced H. And so it could be during the days of Hiel. If you want to say it Jael, that's fine. They were contemporaries. Now, Jael is a Hebrew name. And so they are together. So what do we know about the times in which he lives? Well, we know that with Ehud, if you go back to chapter 3, you'll notice in verse 30, it says that Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest 80 years. So that's 80 years. When you read this, though, it seems as though that in that 80-year span, normally it's about a 40-year span between these judges, but in this 80-year span, it seems as though that is where Shamgar has done his work. That seems like the judge Shamgar performs his work during that 80-year span of peace, so that they can say that they had 80 years of peace, and when the Philistines tried to raise their head up, he slapped it down. That seems to be the way that Judges reads. Now, when you go back to chapter 5, it talks about that the highways were unoccupied. What that means is, that means that there was nobody traveling with the trade routes. Now, what was the trade route? Down through Israel, there is a main valley. It's called the Jezreel Valley. That's where the Battle of Armageddon will take place, in the Valley of Jezreel. And that was the main thoroughfare where that the northern people in Israel and the southern people in Israel could do their trade, do their business, as we would say. It was their thoroughfare. But the Philistines had begun to occupy the road. And so when they occupied that road, and you would have travelers that would be coming by, their goods would be stolen from them. If they were not stolen, there would be tolls, or basically extortion money, that would be taken from the people. That's not an uncommon thing. In World War II, the Germans had what they call wolf packs. And they had submarines that were these wolf packs, and they were all through the Atlantic. And I read that during the time of World War II, when those wolf packs were hunting, that there were 3,500 merchant ships and 175 warships that were sank in the Atlantic Ocean. That's a lot of tonnage at the bottom of that ocean. And it was because of those submarines in the merchant lanes. They were just sinking it. And so you have that as a type of warfare. It kept the Allies from being basically resupplied. If you want to defeat an army, you cut their supplies off. In Israel, there is a place that you will go if you visit Israel called Masada. Well, Masada, it is a fortress that's up on top of a hill. It was a palace of Herod the Great, and it later was turned into a place where that the revolutionaries in after the time of Christ, when they rebelled against Rome, that was their last refuge. And the way that the Romans defeated it was that they did an encampment, and when you're on top, you can look down and you can still see the places where those encampments were. Well, that was the siege. They would not let anybody out. They would not let anybody in. Now, there was water that came in via an aqueduct that came in, but the Romans did not get their water from there, and they stopped it so that the Jews could not get it. But where they got theirs from was about 15, 20 miles away in what is called En-Gedi. Year-round, En-Gedi has water. That is where David, when he was fleeing from Saul, when he hid in the caves, and it says that Saul went in to cover his feet, David and his men were hiding in those caves, and there at En-Gedi, they had a water supply. That is where the Romans got their water and their supplies, and there was every day there was a constant caravan going back and forth carrying water to thousands of Romans. And so you've got these trade routes in the Jezreel Valley, and so it says that the travelers, which are the Jewish travelers, they would walk through byways. That means they were taking the back roads. It's like sometimes on 78 Highway, you look and you think, that traffic is nuts. If you've ever been on 78 at 5 o'clock on a Friday, it's nuts. The only thing that's worse than Loganville at 5 o'clock on a Friday is Snellville at Christmas. That is awful. I mean, I would rather have to fast for 3 days than to go in Snellville at Christmas time. And so what do? I find if I've got to drive an extra 5-10 miles, I'll drive around it just to not have to sit there. Well, these people did not want to get robbed. They didn't want to get beaten within an inch of their life or even lose their life. And so they would go in the byways and they would go around. Now, the armaments that the Jews had were nothing compared to what the Canaanites had / Philistines. I want you to look with me at Judges 1, and I want you to look with me, I think it's at verse 19. I think that's it. Let me get my glasses on. Yeah, that's chapter 2. I'm wrong chapter. Okay. Verse 19. And the Lord was with Judah, and he drave out the inhabitants of the mountain, but could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley. And why? Because they had chariots of iron. Israel did not have iron. Israel had wood. When they went to battle, they didn't have iron chariots. They had some iron that would go on the tip of a spear, but most of their armaments were basically pointed sticks or rocks that had been tied to a stick that they could knock somebody in the head with. Look with me at, I think it's chapter 4. Yeah, look at chapter 4, verse 3. And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord. And what are they crying about? For he, which is Sisera, he had 900 chariots of iron. So it seems as though that from chapter 1 to chapter 4, that there is another group of Philistines that have come in, and they have brought more armaments with them to fight against the inhabitants of what we know as Israel, or the land of Canaan. And it's like the Philistines, the Canaanites, got into the land about the same time that Israel did. But they were more advanced in their military equipment than Israel was. Now, if you want to think about a way, think about this. When they were settling the United States out west, how did we have the advantage? Was it that we had more people that were going west? No, not always. But you know what we had? We had rifles. A rifle beats a bow and arrow every day of the week and twice on Sunday. And you and I, we can understand that because it's in our history. Well, think about a couple of thousand years before that. And you've got this group of Philistines. They have iron. They have iron chariots, which means they've got horses that are pulling it. And an iron chariot will run over you and leave you as a spot in the road. And so you've got the armament situation. Now, as I mentioned, I think that Shamgar is a contemporary of Ehud, and they probably have settled in what is called the western part of the land of Israel. Well, what is the western part? Well, if you were to look at a map of Israel, and we're not going to do that tonight, but if you were to look at a map of Israel and look at the western part, there would be a particular area down toward the south, and you know that as Gaza. You have the Gaza Strip that is down there. That is the area in which the Philistine people came in. They tried to come in down near Egypt, and they were repelled. So they went up the coast, and that's where they were able to come in with no resistance. And then they began to send out parties into the other parts of the country so that they could scout out what they could take. So that's where we're at. Now, I want to give you a verse that's in chapter 10. I think it's chapter 10. Let me see if I wrote that down. Yeah, look at verse 11. The Lord is speaking, and he says, "And the Lord said unto the children of Israel, did not I deliver you from the Egyptians?" That's a reference to the time of Moses. "And from the Amorites and the children of Ammon." That's a reference to the time of Joshua. "And from the Philistines." Now, we see Philistines one time in the first 10 chapters. So when it says that he delivered from the Philistines, there's only one reference to that biblically, and that's what we have read about Shamgar. And so you have Shamgar that has become the first fighter of the Philistine people. You have this man, he is unlikely to be a hero. But then again, there's a lot of people that God uses that were unlikely. Gideon was the least in his father's house. He was unlikely. Ehud, he was unlikely. You've got Samson, you know, as strong as he was, morally, he had trouble, but yet God used him with all of his flaws. And so you have these Philistines. Only one time in the book of Judges through the first 10 chapters. Now, they're going to show up in spades during the time of Samson. But what do they do when they come in? They build 5 cities. You could probably name some of those cities. There is Ashkelon. There's Ashdod. There is Gaza. There is Gath. And there is Ekron. You got all of those 5 cities. And those 5 cities are really included in some of Israel's history. We learned about that when I preached through 1 and 2 Samuel several years ago. When Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, when those boys decided they wanted a good luck charm, they took the Ark of the Covenant into battle with them, and God wasn't having it, so God let the Ark of the Covenant be captured. The Philistines thought our God's bigger than their God, and so they put the Ark of the Covenant in the temple of Dagon. Next morning, it's on his face. They set it back up. Next morning, it's not only on its face, but its hands is cut off. God is showing that, hey, I don't need my people to do my fighting if I don't want them to. And so you've got the Philistines, and they are now settled in the country. Now they're trying to take over in this 80-year time of peace. And so God says, all right, I'll use Shamgar. And so what are some things that we need to understand? Let me give you 3 things tonight and we'll be done. Number one, start where you are. Now these are going to be very, very, very deep. Number one, start where you are. Now I don't want that to blow you away. Start where you are. What does that mean? That means where you're at right now in your life, you go, I'll just make sure that I'm living my life for the Lord. You say, well, I've already been doing that for the last 20 years. Then you just keep it up. You just keep on every day. You make the decision, I'll just walk with the Lord. Now, when this battle takes place, most likely he is plowing. You say, where do you get that from? Because of what he had in his hand. He had an ox goad in his hand. You don't walk around with an ox goad just for the fun of it. All right? When you're walking around with an ox goad, it's because there's some oxen somewhere. What are the oxen for? For plowing a field. Now, there were villagers that would not even go into the field because they were scared of the raiding parties. It happened. Where do you find Gideon? You find him over by a threshing floor, and he's stowing it up, and he's looking. And all of a sudden, he's ducking again. Why is that? Because every time the crop comes in, the Canaanites want to come and take the product. They don't want to plant it. They don't want to tend to it. They just want to take it once it's been done. And you've got the people of God that were hiding, and no doubt Shamgar was one of the few that was willing to go out and do something, and plowing was probably one of those things. Now, he has experienced probably stealing, threatenings. He's probably experienced that just because of what we read in chapter 5, how that there was no trade going on. They wouldn't go out into the field. The villagers would not. I mean, he knew all about those stories. And so he just did this, though. He said, whatever happens, I'm just going to go. I got to do something. I just can't sit here and not have anything for my family. I can't sit here and not have anything as far as being able to live. And so the Bible says that he slew of the Philistines 600 men with an ox goad. Now, when I read that, I'm thinking, was this guy like Arnold Schwarzenegger on steroids? Well, what the Bible does not say is that he killed 600 at one time. It may be that this was over a period of time. Now, it may be that he did kill them at one time. Samson did that. He had the jawbone of an ass, and he slew 1,000 Philistines. That was a one-time thing. But nowhere does it say that Shamgar was supernatural in his strength. And so whether it was one time or whether it was 10 times or if it was even 20 times, he has the reputation of killing 600 in total. Now, if we don't start where we're at, then we're not going to really get to where we want to go. I'll give you an example. If you say that you want to get a college degree, but you never make the effort to go to college, and you don't just keep plotting, you know what you're not going to get? You're not going to get a degree. Does that not make sense? So, yeah, I want a degree, but you don't even enroll in college. That's not wise. That's not very discerning. Boy, I sure would like to have a lot of money. GW was telling me this morning, and I don't know if I'm going to get these numbers exactly right, but there is a golfer named Scotty, I think it's pronounced Scheffler. Evidently, he's the best golfer in the world right now, at least money-wise, all right? Last week, he made, I think, $5 million playing golf. That's a lot of money to play golf. This week, I think that he is going to make probably $2 or $3 million. If he makes a particular cut, and I think it's called maybe the FedEx deal, where I think it's all the champions that get together, he's got a shot at making like $15 million. And if he doesn't win, it's only going to be $10 million. And then there was one more thing that G was telling me about. And all I'm thinking is, I don't know how the man's going to make it. Don't know how the guy's going to survive on that little bit of money. And so, if you want to be a golfer, you got to start. If you want money, you got to get a job. Now, I know that there's a whole lot of college kids today, and they just go, well, I don't need a job. I mean, I'll give you an example. The guy that's running to be the mayor of New York City, Mandani, that guy's a trust fund baby. And yet, what is he doing? He's saying, we're going to have city-run grocery stores. You know how long that lasts? About 2 months. They have tried that over and over and over and over and over again in a lot of different places. But you know why it's going to work this time? Because he's smarter than everybody else that's ever come before him. The guy's a commie. All right? But yet, there's going to be stupid people in New York City, and they're going to vote this guy in. They're going to get what they vote for, just like we get what we vote for. And you and I, we need to understand that if we're going to serve the Lord and be used of the Lord, we just got to start. If you want a job, or if you want money, you got to get a job. If you want a degree, you got to get enrolled in class, all right? And so we start where we are. And if we don't start serving the Lord, what are we going to have at the judgment seat? Number two, this is deep. Use what you have. Start where you are. Use what you have. You say, I don't have anything. You got something. I know that if you've got the Lord, you've got a testimony. I know that if you were saved, I know you've got at least two gifts. You probably have a lot more than you realize or you want to admit. What did he have? He had an ox goad. That's what he had in his hand. Now, what is an ox goad? An ox goad is a stick. On one end of it, it may have a little small piece of metal that would be pointed so they could poke the oxen into blessed assurance. On the other end, there would be a little bigger piece of metal, and it would be used to scrape the plowshare when the mud would be on it. Now, you could use either end of the goad to use as a weapon, but that was the weapon that Shamgar had. That was what was in his hand. And you and I, we need to take what we have and we need to use it for the glory of the Lord. When I think about take what we have, how many of us can think, well, what about Fanny Crosby? That great songwriter from 100 plus years ago, and all of the songs that she wrote, and yet she had all of these problems. What about the lady that is still living today, Joni Erickson Tata? Every time I hear that lady speak, I'm thinking, she's good. She is good. What a testimony. And here she is. She is a quadriplegic. But yet she has written many, many, many books. She is an inspirational speaker. And here she is having to be in a wheelchair. She takes what she has and does something with it. We don't have any excuse. We just simply take what we have and use it. Just exactly like Shamgar did. Third deep thing, do what you can. Do what you can. He did not come from royalty. Now there is a judge that we know is Othniel. Othniel was of the lineage of Caleb. Now Caleb is royalty. He was one of the guys that, one of the two spies during the time of Joshua. Not the one I preached about this morning, but the Joshua of Moses' time. Othniel is one of his offspring. He is royalty. Shamgar has got a heathen name. He's called a son of a pagan deity. He is nobody special. But yet, what was his excuse? He didn't have one. All right. I'm tired of the Philistines coming in, taking our food, hurting our people. I'm not putting up with it anymore. Ehud gave us the peace. We're going to keep the peace. He comes in and out real quick. I mean, he comes in, he's there, and boom, we know nothing else about him except these two verses that are in Judges. Don't have any idea how he died. We don't know any of that stuff. We don't know about his offspring. We simply know that his name was Shamgar. He was a son of Anath, which is a pagan deity. And that's about it. And he had an ox goad. And he killed 600 Philistines total. That's what we know. And so we do what we can. Can I tell you that our future can be determined by how we live our lives? Little decisions. I'm constantly amazed at how people can get their lives out of kazip. And it's usually not because of one bad decision, but because of 100 little ones. If you make 100 little ones right, the bad ones usually take care of themselves. Now, every once in a while, there's just like a boom, a blow up. But usually it's a slow leak that causes the problem. And so, he is a man that was willing to be used. He was a man that was willing to take what he had. He said, I'll just do what God wants me to do. And so he fought. He fought. Did you know that he did not have any promise really of victory? He just got tired of being beat on. I came across the quote from a man, the Millers gave me a book on Jewish literature, and I love reading that book. It's got all kind of stories in there about the Jewish people. And I came across this, and this Rabbi Tarfon, he said this. He said, "It is not your obligation to complete the work," and their work in Judaism is of trying to make the world a better place. "It is not your obligation to complete the work of perfecting the world. It's not, you don't have to complete it, but you are not free to desist from it either." In other words, you may not live to see it all come to pass, but you are commanded to do the work until you can't. And in the work of God, we may not see everything come to pass. There's usually not a month that goes by that we don't have somebody that passes away, somebody that moves away. In the work of the Lord, there's a lot of that. But we keep going. Charles Wesley has a quote that I use often, and it's in Westminster Abbey in London, and it simply says this, that God changes his workmen, but his work goes on. Shamgar, he simply took that ox goad and said, "I'm done. I am tired of them shutting these roads down. I'm tired of them stealing our crops from the field." And so he just fought. And so, what does this mean to me? It means God doesn't use lazy people. God expects people to work. If somebody won't work, Paul said, don't let them eat. We ought to be workers. But it's ultimately that the Lord that gives the victory. If we go back to chapter 10, verse 11, it'll say, "Did not I give you victory over the Philistines?" Just like the Egyptians, the Amorites, and the children of Ammon, he gave victory over the Philistines. At every step of the way, God's saying, "I did that for you." He may have used Shamgar, and he may have used Othniel, and he may have used Gideon. He may have used all of them. But ultimately, it was God that did it. Final thought. Shamgar should make us grateful that no one is too obscure or tainted for God to use. Shamgar, with his murky background and his ox goad, is one element of a pattern of God using unlikely people that runs right through Judges, from the left-handed Ehud to hesitant Barak to fearful Gideon to the outcast Jephthah to the wild man Samson. If God could use these people, he can use anyone, even you and me. That's a quote that came from a preacher when he was commenting on the book of Judges. As I thought about that this afternoon, I thought, you know, God can use any of us if we'll just make ourselves available. The old adage says this, that if we'll just give ourselves to the Lord, make ourselves available, that is the best thing, is availability. It's not always ability. It's not always the most talented. It's the one that is the most available that God uses. I want us to be like Shamgar. I want us to just start where we're at, use what we have, and just keep working and keep working and keep working, and let the Lord give us the victory. I hope that'll be a good word for you tonight.